Hey gang, are you new to this podcast? Have you subscribed on iTunes or Stitcher and realize that you can only access the 20 most recent shows on these platforms? Do you want to binge on How Did I Get Here? Well, check out our archives, available for free. Simply go to howdidigethere.podbean.com. Look on the right-hand column and our entire catalog is easily accessible by month and year. Check out great conversations with such artists as Quiet Company, A Giant Dog, Dana Falconberry, Frank Turner, and literally hundreds more. Just go to howdidigethere.podbean.com and start listening. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys today. Trey Privett and John Courtney from the band Lost Coast are here, and we have a great conversation. They stopped by a couple of weeks ago. We talked about their album that they've recorded, which is not out yet, called Voila. It's not going to be out for a while, so you'll have to go hear their song Summer Samaritan on their SoundCloud page. You can find them at lostcoast.com. You can also find them in Austin every Thursday in June at Seaboys Heart and Soul. They'll be playing at 10 p.m. They're also playing on June 5th at the Free Press Summer Fest in Houston. They're playing the ACL Festival. They got a lot of stuff going on. They're a great band, amazing sound. I got to see them and meet them a couple of months ago during South by Southwest when I hosted the South by San Jose show, the Sims Foundation show, and my friend Chaney is their co-manager. And he introduced me to them, and then I got to introduce them on the stage and watch their set. Fantastic band, great soul music, taking a new take, a brand new take on soul music, and that's always exciting. They're very funky. They're very good. All right, so stick around. Enjoy my conversation with Trey and John from Lost Coast. You can find them at lostcoast.com. Check out their Facebook, Instagram, and, of course, SoundCloud. That's coming up in just a second. Let me tell you what's going on with me. I told you guys on Friday that I was going to Houston on to play a graduation show. A graduation party with Skyrocket. And we did that. It was really fun, man. Those guys were insane. We played a really long show. A couple of them got up and jammed. One of the parents came up and said, hey, you know, a couple of these guys are really good musicians and they'd like to get up and play this Dick Dale song from Pulp Fiction. Our drummer Darren knew it, so he played drums. Those guys played bass and guitar. It was fantastic. The crowd was off the hook. We don't normally get to play for people that young. Our audience is a different demographic, you know? So, it wore me out. So when I came back on Saturday from Houston to Austin, I took a long nap, and then I got up. Me and Zuri went to go see Eagles of Death Metal. We stopped and had a Mexican dinner, which I probably shouldn't have had in retrospect. And we went to Stubbs, and as we were watching the Eagles of Death Metal, I started feeling like just not good, like nauseous, like kind of sweaty, and just still tired. Still tired from those kids. I'm still kind of tired. They wore me out. Those guys had so much energy. We had to give them so much more energy than they were giving us, and they were giving us so much energy that trying to double their energy was a feat in itself. So I'm wiped out. I saw a little bit of Eagles of Death Metal, not the whole show, but they were incredible. Great show. Sorry, Zuri, I finked out on you. I'm not really a fink, but I got tired. Hey, I want to tell you guys, we are celebrating our 500th episode with a live podcast recording at the Townsend. That's Monday, June 20th at 8 p.m. My guests will be Taylor Muse from Quiet Company, Kathy Valentine from the Blue Bonnets, AJ Vallejo from all of the bands in Austin that aren't the Blue Bonnets or Quiet Company, Susanna Schofel, and the great Nakia. All right, fantastic show. Be sure you do that. Go to our Facebook page and you can check out the event and find out all about it and see the cool poster made by my friend Jaron Hebert. He was at the Eagles of Death Metal. He was having some cocktails and feeling good. I bet he was feeling bad the next day. In fact, he did send me a text saying he was hungover. But anyway, hey, let's get to this great conversation with Trey Privett and John Courtney from the band Lost Coast. Don't forget that you can see them at ACL, or you can see them June 5th at the Free Press Summer Fest in Houston, Texas, or 10 p.m. Thursdays in June at Seaboys in Austin, Texas. All right, let's talk to Trey and John from the great band Lost Coast. Have a great week. Let's get down.
Thank you. I do.
Yeah, you do?
Mm-hmm.
What kind?
She's half black lab, half Boykin spaniel.
Oh, nice. Mm. Where'd you get it? Like a rescue or?
It was a family friend's dog.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she's about turned 7.
Nice.
In like a couple weeks.
So she's mellow.
She's yeah.
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 Sort of.
Do you live by yourself? It's hard to take care of a dog when you're a musician and you have to go places.
Yeah. I mean, there've been times when I've had to drop her off my mom, but most of the time she kind of takes care of herself, actually. Now that I think about it.
Are you guys from Austin?
I grew up in Houston, actually.
Oh, cool. Where? What part of town?
On the west side of town in an area called Memorial.
Yeah.
Which is outside the Loop, so I mean.
Did you go to Memorial High School?
I actually went to Kincaid.
Oh, yeah. I'm playing there a thing in like 2 weeks.
Oh, nice.
I can't remember what it is that I'm playing, but we've done it before.
Cool.
I'm in this band Skyrocket. But yeah, so you went to Kincaid?
Yep.
Private school?
Yep.
Did you go to public school before?
No, I actually was in private school the whole way up. And I actually, the arts program there was very, very cool. I mean, I got to do full-time band and got to participate in a lot of cool musical opportunities. And there was a jazz band there and got to play jazz bass and kind of learn the ropes a little bit.
That kind of opened the door for you to go to Berkeley and stuff, huh?
Yeah.
Nice. What do your parents do? Like, did they encourage it, or were they like, oh, come on, John? Find a real thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Do that? Well, yeah, my dad is an attorney down in Houston, so it's always been sort of a weird push and pull. But yeah, you know, my dad taught me piano songs when I was 7 or 8 years old, and I always have those memories, and he has them too. And he also taught me how to play guitar. So there's definitely some musical stuff in the family. And in fact, I think that maybe he's living vicariously through me a little bit at
cool.
this point, where his dad kind of made him practice law. And so he's kind of like, I'm happy for you.
Right. That's good.
Yeah.
That works out. What about you, Trey? Are you from here?
I'm from Georgia. Columbus,
Georgia.
Mm.
Oh, wow. Is that where you guys recorded this record in?
Athens.
Yeah. Athens?
Yeah. In Athens, Georgia.
Okay. Where in Georgia are you from?
I'm from Columbus.
Columbus, Georgia.
Mm-hmm. And then we recorded the album at a place called Chase Park in Athens.
Wow. My Uncle Jimmy lives in Columbus, Georgia. Swear
oh,
to
really?
God. Yeah.
Hmm.
Jimmy What's Gowdy.
I don't know if I've met him before.
I got a cousin there named Jamie. He's a dude. He's got
okay.
a bunch of kids. But he's okay. probably a little older than you.
Okay.
Anyway.
Columbus is pretty big.
So, how did you find music? Were you raised like in a...
I think probably my first introduction was through my grandmother's brother. He's a dude named Hiram Bullock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I read that in your thing.
Yeah, so he kind of introduced me to guitar, and then I took piano lessons as a kid, and also wrote a lot as a kid, too. I won, like, a poetry contest when I was in...
Oh, really?
Fifth or sixth grade, yeah.
Well, that's super cool. What's Hiram doing now? I mean, still playing?
He passed away when
oh, he
I was,
did?
Like,
I'm
a
sorry.
Senior in high school. Oh, it's all good.
I didn't even know that. I remember him when he... I remember he played with Sting at some point.
Yeah, he played with Sting. He played with Santana.
Oh, really?
Joe Walsh. Played on the Letterman Show.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he was a jazz guy?
Like jazz fusion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I guess that's what he brought to those
exactly
those gigs that he played.
Like 80s jazz
yeah.
stuff.
He did. Wasn't it him that did that? There's like a Sting cover of Little Wing or something.
Yeah, totally.
And that's him on that.
Yeah,
that's great.
That
fucking
was, yeah, that
work.
Was one of like his most commercially successful things, I think.
I wish I knew more of the underground. I just felt like a jerk, only knowing like, oh yeah, yeah so you know his most famous song, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's the one.
So, did you know you wanted to be a musician early on? Like, is that why you were?
I was always fascinated by it.
Yeah.
So yeah, like from. Childhood, I would say, yeah, it's definitely up there. I mean, I've always wanted to be a writer. I felt like that was a good avenue to do it in the way that I kind of saw as feasible.
Yeah.
Too.
How did you guys meet?
It's actually kind of a funny story. So we met at a house party. I can't even put my finger on exactly when.
A little over a year ago.
And, we just got to talking on the little balcony, and we were like, yeah, let's jam sometime. And we were going to exchange numbers, and I was about to text him, let's jam sometime. And in our phones, I had already saved his number from a year prior, and both of us had no memory of it. And I had already texted him, hey, let's jam sometime, like in 2013, and none of us had any memory of it.
Yeah.
So it was this crazy, weird deja vu sort of moment where we went to exchange and numbers and we had already met before and completely forgot. So yeah. It kind of felt like
so
the
we
universe.
Don't know.
Where was that?
The house party was actually like a block from where we are right now.
Yeah, oh, so it was actually really close.
It was here in Austin.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's just crazy coincidence. So once we saw that, we were like, oh, this is ordained by the gods. Mm-hmm. We have to follow through now.
Yeah. And then you guys got together just like a little over a year ago, right?
Yeah. And the ball started rolling, and it's been a lot of fun. Trey and I spent, once we started spending time alone, just the two of us in the studio and writing songs, and I would do a little production stuff and make these little demos, we kept doing it. We ended up doing it almost 6 nights a week for like at least 4 or 5 hours at a time, and we started to get a little obsessed with it. So mm-hmm.
There is that element of God, what is it? It's like a palpable vibe of like excitement in the music and even in the production, you know, and the songs and stuff.
Yeah,
that's kind of how we like to approach it.
Yeah, you guys did a really great job. It has a lot of it's a you can tell it's rooted. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the history of like almost like R&B and rock, and yet it's still very, very fresh production wise. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it has that sort of, I don't know how to say, you sound timeless. It can be from now or it could be from back then, if that makes sense.
That does make sense.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's really good. And I remember watching you guys at the South by San Jose thing, and you guys were great.
Sweet,
how did you integrate? You guys did all. Did you guys do the record just the two of you, and then start bringing in the? Did you bring in Megan and then the drummer?
Yeah, we. So John and I played pretty much all the instruments except for drums. We have my friend Alex, who plays in a band called New Madrid, played on the drum tracks, and we cut all the tracks, and then Megan came along, and then I guess Damien came along like right before you saw
it's been outside. An interesting process too, because in the studio I felt like Trey and I, we did a lot of overdubs, only in the sense that we could stack so many different parts and there was always synthesizers and things going on. So part of the live show from my point of view has been how to incorporate those sort of standout sounds from the album while still not getting too lost in firing off samples or anything. So try to keep it all live, but still have some of those sounds that we worked so hard to make. So there's some synthesizer work going on.
Yeah, yeah. And how do you pull that off, like at a gig that I saw you at where it's like throw and go? Like,
I've actually, I used to gig with a big... SV-71 Korg stage piano, now I've trimmed it down to a little 25 key Virus synthesizer, and that I can just kind of throw up and
that
plug
has
in.
Sounds already in it.
Yeah, it does, and I've spent some time tweaking the patches on it, and I can play it standing up, so I can easily switch between guitar and keys. But that's been an interesting sort of fancy footwork thing to kind of mute the guitar, switch to the synth for the chorus, then switch back to the guitar for the verses. And but that's been fun. It's been cool.
Yeah,
it's got a physical component. It's like I'm doing jazzercise up there. It's been good.
When you go through that kind of thing, it's always weird because like the first few gigs that you do, you know how like when you first, your first gigs, when you play, it seems like everything's a little bit ahead of you.
Uh-huh.
Like the song's ahead of you. Like it's just like, whoa, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But I bet you get that doing that. Like the first few times you have to go between the two of them, make sure the sounds are there, make sure your guitar's ready to go for the next tune.
And I've gotten much more calm about it too.
I mean,
exactly. It feels like it's getting away from you, and you drop a pick and all of a sudden it's all... So I've learned to just put like 12 picks across the top of my synthesizer so I can just toss them around.
Well, it's like you don't get the high of making this music together as a bit, like you're stuck in this, and when the gig's over you're like, what?
Yeah.
You know, all you can think of is all the times you missed stuff and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So you said when you made the record you were stacking a lot of tracks. Did you write and record at the same time and kind of piecemeal, like come up with like a drum groove or something or a beat and then start laying stuff down, or did you come up with a lot of music and then you just came in and sang on it, Trey? Or
we tried to like kind of copycat like what Miles Davis did in Bitches Brew, or what D'Angelo did, where they were just kind of, they'd get good drum and bass grooves going. So sometimes we would just have...
And we also hadn't worked with that drummer before we got to Athens, so part of that is, it was not completely improvised, but we definitely had a very fresh energy going into it, where
But you had the songs written.
Not totally.
We had a few songs were ready, where we kind of knew what we wanted out of those songs, but then we left ourselves a lot of wiggle room for making completely new spots, tracks on the spot. And some of the best songs were like, we had some like late night sessions when we were blowing off steam after sort of working, in quotes, all day.
Right.
And we didn't really realize the tape was rolling, and then lo and behold, hey, that bass groove just really killed it. Let's just punch that up a little bit, and we got some cool songs that way.
That's cool as shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That spontaneity always makes it really exciting when you're making the music, like to be creating and recording, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just boring recording what you've been playing live for the last 2 months.
Exactly. Yeah. It makes it a cool little event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So so you guys, you got invited to play ACL.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're a young band, like in the life of your band.
Yep.
I mean, this is pretty exciting, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
very exciting.
I've never played ACL before.
But
it's terrible. No, it's amazing.
Yeah, but our band's only been around this finalized lineup that we have, the four of us, me, Trey, Megan, and Damien's our drummer. It's only been a thing for
since about March.
So I saw you guys, it was just weeks.
Yeah,
or
but,
a week
but
or something.
It's amazing how well Damien fit in, the drums fit into the equation. I mean,
I didn't notice any kind of like.
Damien's great.
I mean, it almost felt like he was so thrilled too, and loves our music, and it just felt like such a good fit that it was kind of seamless. Like there was no time spent getting him up to speed. He was already up to speed. I mean, it was great.
Yeah. What were you guys doing before? Because it seemed, I mean, you've got great booking, you've got great management, you're playing ACL, and like, what were you doing? Did you have those connections before? Or did you guys just record a song and be like, hey, check this out, and all of a sudden people are like, let's do it?
This might be a good opportunity to mention Chaney. You want to tell the story about how you
met
him? It's
funny when you look back at a guy like that and you expect to see this 14-year-old kid from 1985.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's how it is for me. Sorry, how did you meet him, Trey?
Yeah.
We were recording the demos for a couple months, I guess, and I was just showing them random people, and then me and Chaney lived in the same neighborhood on Bolden Creek, and I just happened to run into him. We were both working our dog, and I showed him Monsters, and he was really into it, and we just kept in touch, and he booked us a show at Strange Brew, and then that's how we got in touch with our agent. He came out to see us, and then just kind of started snowballing from there.
Yeah, it's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, what an exciting thing. So how many gigs have you played as this lineup?
Oh, my.
I don't know.
I think quite a few. I haven't been keeping track. Maybe with Damien on board, about 15. We had a residency last fall at Strange Brew where we played there every Monday at like 8
p.m. That's an interesting place for you guys to play.
Well, at this point, we didn't have a drummer, so we were actually playing the songs from the album, kind of hunting for a drummer.
How were you playing them, though? Were you playing the tracks?
Well, it's funny. Our bass player, we would play sometimes with acoustic guitars. We had, like, acoustified versions of the songs. Our bass player was playing a stand-up bass. It was kind of like an alternate version of the album where everything was kind of a... I don't know what word I'm looking for.
Unplugged.
There you go. I was going to say the basic components, but everything's kind of simplified.
Well, that's good, because then you can see how the songs stand up on their own.
Yeah,
it's always
exactly.
a true test of a song.
I think even if we had had a solid drummer, we still could have done that. And
but it was a great experience, too, to get up there every week on like a Monday at 8 and play our songs just acoustic. Definitely got the songs really hardwired. And the songs do, they have a nice charm to them. They don't need all of the bells and whistles, but now that we're adding all those little bells and whistles with the synth parts and stuff, they're starting to take flight or whatever. But I'll never forget those Strange Brew gigs without a drummer, just trying to like tap into those grooves and
Is that hard to keep time? Did you have to...
Well, luckily our bass player, Megan, had a pretty good experience playing stand-up bass, and she could do that thing that
the
stand-up...
clicking thing?
Yeah. And it's like an interesting kind of groove, but it's cool. It's cool to get the core components of the songs down that way and to get comfortable playing with each other as a rhythm section sans drums. Because then when the drums come in, it's like, oh my, now we can lean on these drums. Wow, this just opened the door.
But it was, oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a cool experience. And maybe that's why the last few months have been so smooth, is because Damien was such a good drummer already, but me, Trey, and Megan had so much experience already.
Right. Yeah, you guys had a thing going on, and you established kind of your whatever that, the connection together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That must have been weird, too, because your music has is so rhythmic and this is a weird word to use, but danceable.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Totally. But I think one of the good things is, like, we try to make sure that everything's kind of lyrically driven, too. So if we do happen to play acoustic, I mean, it kind of spotlights, like, the vocals or the lyrics or something, too. So it's kind of multifaceted.
Do you feel like you're still coming through as a lyricist and stuff with the whole new band, with the bells and whistles and everything?
Oh, totally.
Live? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, there's a great tune we have. It's called Freedom. And it's just Trey. It's just a vocal. It's like a vocal. Do you want to?
It's just like a...
acapella?
It's just like a vocal arrangement. Yeah, it's an acapella vocal.
And I mean, that's just perfect opportunity to let those lyrics and Trey's voice just shine.
Yeah.
It's just like a little moment of just him.
Yeah. Yeah, but who are your, like, vocal influences?
I like a lot of different stuff. I definitely like all the 50s and 60s soul stuff. A lot. And then Tom York is great. I like a lot of country music too. I mean, it's just every genre has its own, you know, top-notch singer, so it's kind of hard to pick one, because I've been singing since I was a kid, so
yeah,
I go through phases of different.
What brought you to Austin?
It's just a great place to collaborate with other people, I think.
Move from Columbus to here? Okay.
I lived in Athens for a while.
Was there something? How did that go? Was that bad?
Oh, Athens is great. Yeah. I was doing an internship there for this nonprofit festival called AthFest, like right after college. And I mean, it went well. And we ended up going back. So I'd probably go back again to record in the future.
Yeah.
The opportunity
arose. Athens is a great town.
Yeah.
It is a great town.
It's like a funky little. It's tiny Austin in a way. I mean, some people say Athens is to Georgia as Austin is to Texas.
Yeah.
So it's got its cool little dot of blue and a sea of red vibe, as they say.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it that Rick Perry called it? The blueberry in his tomato soup?
Oh, man, that's hilarious.
That's what he said, yeah.
Yeah.
It does have, it's a free, and the B-52s and R.E.M. and all those people are from there, and it's kind of like a hippie town.
And the place where we recorded the album, actually, is where I think R.E.M. did some of those.
Yeah, a lot of people were recorded there. Hits. I think Animal Collective is recorded there, and MGMT. And
wow.
So some cool, like, kind of indie influences, too, more recently than the R.E.M. stuff, the Animal Collective and the MGMT stuff. But that's cool, because making that kind of punchy soul record with a little bit of that, the studio space having like that almost indie energy gives it some freshness.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And so that was cool. And the producer we worked with, our engineer / producer, I guess, his name's Drew Vandenberg. And he works with like Of Montreal and Toro y Moi some bands like that. So coming at him with our sort of background of this kind of like soul funk, and we have, you know, the dancey tracks, as you said. Coming through them through the indie sort of lens, you know, kind of like gave us a cool sound.
Yeah, because like there's something really cool about the MGMT thing too, even though y'all's is more soul oriented.
Yeah,
it's the sound
effects.
I think it's the glossy production and the like trippy synth effects.
Yeah,
that's what I think of.
Yeah, Trey, what did you go to college for?
Journalism and English.
Okay, so yeah, you did want to write.
Mm.
Do you write any long form, like short stories, or have you written a novel? I always ask that question. You never know.
Yeah, I would like to one day, but most of the stuff I write is really short. Like, my concentration is on, like, creative writing. Okay. And most of the passages I always did were really short, so... And I've done articles, too, but they were always... I like to keep it short and sweet, but I would like to learn how to, like, expand and do narratives and stuff like in that way, too.
Yeah.
But our album is kind of interconnected in the way that it kind of tells a solid story, so I guess... Sometimes I like to connect short works and make them, but...
So they're like them, chapters?
Yeah, almost? Exactly. But I haven't written a novel now.
I could see a novel of yours being very fun to read, though.
Yeah, maybe. One day.
What was your focus at Berkeley?
Jazz, funk, fusion, and guitar.
John's also in law school right now.
That's oh, no, a whole shit? Yeah, that's yeah. a whole other thing. Yeah, Trey just opened a whole can of worms on that discussion.
No, this is great.
Yeah, I actually am in law school at UT. This week I have a copyright law exam on Thursday, so that kind of answers the question of what I'm there to study. There's an entertainment law and a music law and a sort of a intellectual property body of coursework over there that's very useful and this whole music biz thing, and also just kind of philosophically fascinating. I feel like if you approach law school in that way, where you're there just to learn and not there just to get a job afterwards, you'd be surprised to find how much better it gets and how much more relaxed the whole culture of it is. But yeah, copyright law.
I wish you could go speak to seniors at high schools and tell them that very thing that you just said.
Yeah, because it is a shame.
All of college is like that.
Yeah, it's a shame how many people are just focused on what happens after. They're like, well, if I do this right, then I'll have a job waiting for me. But that's education, and especially higher education, is going to be much more intuitive and feel like you really want to be there if you're there just to learn and you see it that way. And you can always just go to a library if you really are that interested in learning. Yeah. And it won't be that expensive, you know, but if you play your cards right and you can find a way to make it less expensive, law school's pretty interesting endeavor. And I'm kind of wrapping it up here. Hopefully I'll be done next fall, which the timing is
means fall 2016.
Yeah,
okay,
that would be my last one. But the timing of it's been pretty crazy because the band stuff has been kind of getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. And at least I'm on my way out of law school. If I had been like a first-year student this year, my head would probably explode. But I'm glad that law school is winding down as this phase of my life is winding up. It feels like a very nice inflection point in my lifestyle, sort of, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What about you, Trey? You going to go to medical school?
Trey's dad is a doctor, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What but kind?
He's a pediatrician.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he delivers babies and takes care of babies.
Nice.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
He's happy with it. He's been doing it forever.
Did he want you to do it?
I think he just kind of wanted me to do whatever made me happy at the end of the day. I think there was like some pressure early on, but he's big on just like kind of doing what you're good at and being successful in that way. So I think he kind of caught on earlier on that I would do better at this than being a doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, I think so. When I talk to him now, he says that, but I'm not sure when that started processing his head.
That's funny. I come from, like, my mom's side of the family. It's like a family of doctors. Like, my great-great-grandmother was a midwife. And then it just went on. Like, my great-grandfather was a doctor. His wife was something in medicine, too. And then my grandfather and his brother were doctors. And then my grandfather's brother's three kids are doctors. And all of their kids are doctors.
Wow.
Yeah. And on our side, we just kind of like, my dad had four daughters. Nobody was a doctor. Then I was like the first grandchild. What I was getting at is I have photos. Like, he used to have medical coats made for me when I was 4 years really? Old.
Oh, wow.
To my size. And I had like a real leather medical bag. Yeah. Like, yeah, it was crazy.
With a stethoscope.
Yeah. I had a stethoscope. I have all these pictures. I'm wearing like a little clip-on tie. It was like that guy had a plan. Yeah. And I totally ruined it. But he came around and he was like, well, you know, you feel like I do about medicine. That's the way you feel about music. And that's
exactly. Yeah.
Like your parents, is your dad's a lawyer?
Yeah, he is. But he's actually an intellectual property attorney. And so while he doesn't do specific music law stuff, he does do copyright and trademark stuff. And so... And he's got
a tremendous resource to have when you're in law school. Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, well, you know, it's not like I can just send him my homework and have him do it.
No, I wouldn't say that. But you can have these conversations where
absolutely.
He can kind of give you some very real world.
Absolutely. And I actually was speaking with him recently, and we were talking about how it's funny because he never really made me go to law school. And I think the lack of pressure made me almost want to go even more, sort of. But... it's been cool to be able to kind of geek out with him on the specifics of copyright law. You know, now that I've taken the course, I can be like, Section 106 of the copyright has the exclusive rights for derivative works, you know, and then we can just go off on that. And he'll tell me about some of the cases he works on. And, you know, and it's funny, we were talking about trademarking band names, and he was talking about Blink 182, how they wanted to just be Blink, but that was already trademarked. So they just added 182 to the end of it.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, which is kind of like a maybe apocryphal. I don't know if that's the real story or not.
Yeah, there was a band here in the 90s called Little Sister. And when they got like a record deal, they had to change their name to Sister 7 because they were the seventh little sister in the line of people getting to copyright Little Sister.
Yeah, it's funny how that works out. Jimmy Page wanted Led Zeppelin to be called the New Yardbirds. But they
what a terrible idea that
would have been. They couldn't do that. They got sued.
I think
by the old Yardbirds. So
they're getting sued a lot now.
Yeah, they
are.
What
happened with that Stairway to Heaven thing?
I'm not sure. We actually studied it in class, but it's up in the air right now. There may have been something that came down. I actually kind of blew up at all my classmates a little bit for that one because I am under the impression that there is no infringement. There's like a classic vamp that the beginning of Stairway to Heaven uses, and it's like dum 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 dum
right.
And you kind of almost hear it in a lot of other kinds of music, and some of my classmates were like, well, that is just lazy songwriting, and I like was like raised my hand ferociously to defend Led Zeppelin to everyone in the room because it's just a certain kinds of vibes can only be brought about with certain chord progressions, and if you put a box on those, then you're hindering creative.
That's why in the Dark Ages, like that weird half step was known as like the devil's note or whatever, whatever it is that Black Sabbath used on their first couple of records, like for every song. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That chromatic sort of, it is dark. It's dark sounding.
I can see a whole society being scared of it. Like, you can't even play it. It summons devils.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
Is the only copyrightable part of a song, like, actually copyrightable, if that's the right word, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. The lyrics and the melody.
Well, so there's two kinds of sound record. Well, I kind of answered my question. There's two kinds of copyright nowadays. And in 1972, it used to be just the lyrics and the chords and the melody, and that was called the musical work.
Okay.
And you can file that as sheet music.
Right.
Or you can file it as a master recording. But in 1972, they added another kind of copyright, the sound recording copyright, which is just the literal sound with all the little effects you might want to use. And that comes into play with sampling a lot.
Okay.
So if, say, the Beastie Boys want to use just a clip of, like, a jazz flautist making a weird noise with their flute.
Right.
That doesn't really hinge on the musical work because it's just, like, a noise
it's
a flute player.
Made.
Yeah, it's the exact recording.
Okay.
So that's that comes into play with sampling a lot.
Yeah. Man, you guys are lucky you're a good resource to have in the band.
Yeah, we all try to carry on.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you don't. I'm just saying, like, but there's not usually a guy that knows copyright law in a band.
It's cool to know. Yeah, it's valuable. And that's kind of the reason I wanted to learn it, just because I thought it would help the music career out.
Yeah.
It makes me feel a little out of place in law school sometimes, where I'm like, I'm just here to learn about music so I can keep making music. And a lot of the people there are very stressed a lot of the time. And I almost wish I could I could share some sort of casual vibes with them or something. Because I tend to do much better in school when I'm chill about it, I guess.
Yes. Coming at it with a comment. You know, you're talking about copywriting names. What is Los Coast?
That's a good question. Yeah. It's just...
Was it something that wasn't copyrighted?
Yeah, well, it's a combination of things. Yeah.
Totally. It's just... For SEO purposes, it was just... Google didn't have something like that on there. So that was... initially, we wanted Lost Coast, I think, for like a second.
Lost?
And then,
I think I came up with Lost Coast, and it sounded like a clothing line or something.
Yeah,
and
it was a little too...
Trey realized it was a little too...
It just, to beachy. Me, it's beachy, and it had so many connotations.
Reminded me of like Capri Sun or something.
Too many images, so I wanted something that didn't really mean anything.
And so Trey came up with the Take the T Away.
Yeah.
And then I kind of wrestled with that, and I was like, well, is it Los or Los now? People are going to be confused. And he's like, that's a good thing. And we just went from there.
Totally. I mean, aesthetically, I like the way it looked on paper, and it's kind of like we were talking about, like Led Zeppelin, like Led is misspelled, you know. It's just all that sort of confusion kind of, I think, kind of works.
It has a charm to it.
Yeah, works artistically.
So with this record being done, and you guys are kind of like looking for a home for it right now, you guys are coming together as a band and playing shows, and do you rehearse a lot?
We've been playing a lot of gigs and rehearsing quite a bit. Yeah.
Okay. Like trying to put a show together.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
A, you know.
Get like your... a proper show. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a record. I mean,
you're about to do residency, spot. Right?
In June. We're doing every Thursday at Sea Boys in June.
That's gonna be great. I love that place.
Yeah,
I'll come there.
Super vibey.
Sea Boys Heart and Soul is the name of it. Yeah. It's a great vibe for us too. Yeah, it fits really well.
So with all of that stuff going on, are you writing?
Actually, we have a single that's separate from the album up and about on it's on my what blog was it on?
It's on my old Kentucky blog.
Oh yeah. Right. Yeah, Cheney sent me that. Mm-hmm.
And that song is called Summer Samaritan. And anyone can just go find us online and listen to that song.
Yeah, and then we're constantly writing.
Yeah, and we actually have some. Yeah. We have some songs that are a brewing.
Are you guys still doing the songwriting yourselves, or have you brought Megan and Damien into it? Or
as of now, it's still pretty much just Trey and I.
We have our process, and I think
there is a cool hashing it out that happens between where we have sort of the basic components, like maybe the chord progression and the lyrics and the vocal melodies, all figured out between Trey and I. And then when it comes to the specifics of the groove, the bass player and drummer obviously are the ones who are kind of like, well, let's try this out, or how about that? Let's make it swing.
We give them freedom to kind of do whatever they want.
So it's cool. It's a cool process, though. I mean, it's not too much oversight either. Kind of like give them something to chew on, and all of a sudden, pachow, we got a new tune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do you work out the arrangements a little bit more as a band now? Like, have you changed some stuff? When you brought in Damien and you guys kind of figuring out your thing
at
your rehearsals, are you kind of like, oh, let's change this a little bit, the ending?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, yeah, very much so. The beginnings and endings, we definitely, with Damien, kind of penciled those in. Damien offering a lot of good suggestions, too.
Yeah.
That's cool.
We just kind of let him
And as a drummer, he's so great at that, too, being like, how about we end it this way? And we're like, that's a great idea. He's like, cool, so let's do it that way now.
Yeah. And have you gotten out of town to play?
We were in New Orleans last weekend.
Oh yeah, that's right. How was that? Yeah,
it was awesome.
It was fun.
Gotta love New Orleans. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pouring down rain, we felt like the voodoo came out a little bit in the rain and the jazz fest blues music, and
Did you guys play Jazz Fest?
We didn't actually play Jazz Fest proper.
After thing.
We played two after things, one on Friday and one on Saturday.
Shit, that's still awesome. Where'd you play?
It was pretty wild. On Friday, we played at a place called Gasa Gasa.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like that name. Reminds me of New Orleans. And then on Saturday, we played at a house party, literally next door to Tipitina's.
Oh, nice.
And there was like the whole block, the Tipitina's block, was just like a giant funk party. I mean, we played alongside some other funky bands like The Motet and Ear Funk. We're both playing... either at Tipitina's or at another house party. So we were all, it was kind of like, I know all of New Orleans is like Funk Alley, but
right.
We were part of a cool little jazz fest after party row of shows.
That's awesome. Did you get to go to Jazz Fest and see anything?
Yeah, we did. I really love the band Maze. It's just like tight prog funk.
Frankie Beverly's band.
I know that name. Who is Frankie Beverly?
I think they were big in like the 70s. Marvin Gaye discovered them.
Okay.
But they're funky.
They're very funky.
I bet you guys could help me get started on a good funk playlist somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
totally. You guys on Spotify? You make playlists on Spotify?
Yeah, we do sometimes. We actually DJ'd do you remember the specifics of that? Literally like a couple days ago, Trey and I DJ'd a Kentucky Derby style rooftop party.
It was great.
And it was awesome.
Killer.
And we were booked as DJs because people knew we would quote-unquote bring the funk, I guess. And it was a great opportunity for Trey and I to kind of pool our catalogs and just deliver.
Did you guys spin vinyl?
Well, we got started doing that up there, but the wind started to pick up on the rooftop. But we had the CDJs, so we did it kind of old school where we cross-faded the CD mixes. But yeah, there was a time when I was spinning. I actually had this awesome compilation that is literally called something like Badass Ghetto Funk Blaster Music. I mean, there's like this crazy disco compilation of just deep cut funk tracks, and I almost freaked out because the wind picked up and it nearly launched the vinyl right off of the side of the building.
No.
So it was kind of a disaster, but we fixed it all, and the music never stopped. We were able to smoothly fade it out and just stash all the records under the table.
That's awesome.
But
did you guys
get
into like 70s West African stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I really love Fela Kuti and Afrobeat and Tony Allen. I mean, I'm all about that stuff. When I was in college, I played some bass with the African Ensemble, and I just love that stuff too, because there's just like a political component to a lot of it too, especially with Fela Kuti, where he's like, there's an excitement there, but there's also, it's like not quite preachy.
Right.
This is kind of a negative connotation, but it's kind of a like laying it down,
right.
You know, like kind of spitting the truth.
Yeah.
That kind of that gumption or whatever you want to call it that Fela has is actually really inspiring. I think that Trey and I would blast that kind of stuff before we would write some songs, some of our groovy songs. So,
what do you guys think of the political climate that we're entering or that we're in?
What do you think, Trey?
It's interesting.
It's fucked up.
To say the least.
I mean, it's definitely
it's fucking
insane.
Crazy. Yeah. I was gonna say ripe for commentary.
Yeah,
you can try.
It is, but it's almost like it's so ripe for commentary.
Yeah,
but you don't even know where to start.
Just look at what's happened. What am I gonna say about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. There's not really. There's a lot to say, but it's like how to say it. There's almost too much.
It's funny. I was thinking about this when I was driving home from Franklin, Texas the other night. Later on today, I'm going to be talking to a friend of mine that wrote this book with John Doe about the late 70s, early 80s punk scene in Los Angeles. Mm. And it's real cool. It has all these different people telling their side of the story. And I was thinking that that's the one thing about it, because everyone was mentioning like Reagan and kind of how the government had gone... you know, just say no and all this, like, let's pretend it's like Leave It to Beaver times again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Where, you know, let's make America great again, which is like the same thing this dude's saying. Mm-hmm. But then I was wondering, like, I wonder if that will, I mean, I hate it for the world, but I wonder if that's the sort of thing that the whole art world, literature, you know, music, architecture, everything needs like
a catalyst.
Someone to fight against.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
In that sense, I think... I couldn't ask for like a better time to be an artist.
The times they are changing, as they say.
To be able to comment like poetically on what's going on, but at the same time, it's kind of like a catch-22 where like
you don't want it to be like that.
Want it to be like that, but like at the same time, I mean, it's good. It's a good time to have some sort of like contribution towards like a peaceful movement, I guess, rather than like what's going on.
And it's cool for artists to have something to fight against and something to fight for,
because
that makes it just always makes everything better.
Yeah,
yeah, totally.
You know.
Yeah.
Wow, just got serious.
Yeah.
Someone tell a dick joke, quick. Come on. Yeah, I'm sure you got to know some literary dick jokes, don't you?
Dick jokes?
Dick jokes.
I don't even know what a dick joke.
Okay, so you start your... what? You know what time you're playing on Thursdays at Seaboys?
I believe it's 10.
10.
10 p.m.
In June.
In the month of June.
That's great. Are there other bands that you're... Is there not one other band you're doing it with? Or is there different bands every week?
Soul Supporters or...
I'm not sure if the Soul Supporters will be joining us.
That might be up in the air.
I would like for them to.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
Actually... We had them sing some backup on...
yeah, they helped us with the album.
We got some... They provided some badass female backup vocals for some songs on the album. We actually had them... We do a cut of "You Are My Sunshine" that with the lyrics changed to "You Are My Moonshine," and we were gonna put that on the album, but then we thought that was a little aggressive because "Please
great.
Don't Take My Moonshine Away" started to get a little bit a little too real or a little too close to home, maybe.
I just don't think it fit the vibe. I thought the song was great.
I thought it was like almost sarcastic, and it was kind of tongue in cheek, and I don't know. Funny though, it was funny.
Would you have to get the copyright to?
Yeah, and that's the real thing. At the time, I hadn't taken copyright law, so I was like, "Let's do it." But then now I have a much more let me do some research. I have a feeling we might get sued for that.
I had a lawyer once. I had a song that stole heavily from the Sesame Street theme, and when my band was recording it, I said to our lawyers, "This like." Are we going to get sued? And he was like, "You'll only get sued if you're like fucking raking it in." So
that's what
I do your song.
Exactly.
Let's cross that bridge when it comes. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys have a busy summer ahead of you, and you're looking for a home for the album. Hopefully, it'll come out sometime this year or early next year. Mm-hmm. Are you going to keep on putting stuff like singles out, like you did with Summer Samaritan?
I would like to.
I think that's the plan. Yeah. And we actually have a couple in the works right now. And it might take them about a month or so to get up there. I think that's the plan. You know, Trey and I actually talked about doing that, having a few more breadcrumbs that lead to the big album release.
Yeah, cuz there's something about like the now era of the music industry where there's got to be one thing popping up all the time. Yeah. It seems like to stay, you know, because everyone's life is like based on a news feed.
Uh huh.
You know,
yeah. And the more and more you can plant little seeds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is that something that you guys? I mean, is that something like now that you guys are like in the business part of what you're doing? Is that something that like you have meetings about with your management and stuff? Or
I think we kind of. Just
a little bit, yeah, and a little bit no.
Because it's not something. It's not something you can just let be.
Yeah, I think
if you want to take over,
right? Our manager kind of got the ball rolling with the Summer Samaritan because we had a bunch of single material, but he sort of was like, "Let's make a single, guys." And then once we saw how it worked and how it worked out, and how the process looked, it kind of was like, we can keep doing this. This is cool. This worked out.
Yeah. And it's also just great to have like one-off songs and singles and stuff.
Because the album itself is such a concept album that if we had any material that didn't find a home on that concept, it's great to... And also, you know, there's another LP in the future one day, so it's cool to have material that's separate from any sort of album hunt.
Would you go non-concept on the next one because the last one was kind of, you know what I mean? Sometimes you do that and you're like, all right, now I just want to write songs.
I think we might just keep doing concepts. I don't know. Because if we have the singles, we have an outlet for whatever kind of song we want to make. So, but something about albums sort of being sort of like symphonies in the sense that it's like a collection of deliberately paired together works and not kind of just... a grab bag of standalone tracks. I think that really appeals to me. So we'll see, though. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to take a step back from the concept of a just movie album, something that like runs together.
Is it tough to not perform it as a whole thing?
Well, right now, just the amount of material that we have, we've just kind of been playing it in like different orders, trying to like...
Okay.
randomize it, but I think it all still runs together in different order, so it's all good, you know. But as we get more material, it'd be nice to like piece different things together and make it all kind of a bigger picture.
Yeah,
you know, make the picture bigger every single time.
Wow. Yeah,
rather than because the idea of like a bunch of singles, I would like to do that and release that in its own way, in like very microscopic things. But as like our career expands, I would like for it to all.
Every album is an album within an even bigger album, which is
like
an even bigger.
When you hear a Prince song and you see the color purple, like that would be like.
I'm just imagining like a Russian doll thing. Where you have like little singles and you have like an album and then you have like a meta album that's like the overriding concept.
And then
you have like a meta album, which is like the whole band's giant body of work.
Yeah.
It seems like nowadays people doing it, it's like I'm thinking of like a Janelle Monáe or something.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of has conceptual.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I feel like unfortunately hip hop is falling into like a realm of just singles.
Is that what you find? Do you think that she's hip hop, or do you
I kind of like
a soul?
Yeah, sort of. I feel like I was just associated with like Outkast and stuff and like Big Boy. So a lot of. Her arrangements and like her swag I associate with hip hop, but she's definitely one of the people like keeping albums alive, and there definitely are people out there, but I think it's probably more important now to have a concept album than it has been in the past because of just the
makes the like, album more special.
Like the way that people access music now where they can just get like a song and like play that song over and over to combat that and try to make like a full piece of work that people can have the attention span for. It's just like a battle we're fighting.
There's like a vinyl component too. If I recall correctly, vinyl sales are going up. And I mean, I have a record player at home. Trey does too.
I was listening to Record Me.
Yeah, exactly. And there's that style of listening definitely fell off. But it's coming back
a little bit
as people sort of reappreciate it. And so I always imagine this album of ours coming out on vinyl and having it like a tactile component where it kind of...
Right.
It's like the album is an art form. I think that now's a good time to start making them again. So
Yeah, and I think that on the scale of things has come down. I was listening to Gary Marshall. You know who that is? Or no, I'm sorry. I was listening to Rob Reiner. You know how that is? He's the guy that directed a Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
And When Harry Met Sally and all this stuff. And he was this guy, he was a character called Meathead on the show All in the Family. And they were talking about how when All in the Family was a number one show, there was 24 million people watching it. Wow. There's no, the number one show now, if it has like 10...
Yeah.
That's an unbelievable number. So I feel like the numbers are becoming smaller. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But now we can actually find the audience that wants to hear a concept funk album by Lost Coast. Like you can reach those people.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
And you don't need 80 million.
Right.
You can do it, you know, with a lot less and survive. And playing live is really, you know, you guys are great live.
Thank you.
You'll see me on some Thursdays there.
Awesome.
At the Sea Boys.
All right.
Thursdays, 10 p.m. In June. And go to loscoast.com to find out everything you need to know about you guys that you didn't get from this interview. Anything that I'm missing? Did I forget to say something?
I think you got it.
Chaney.
Hey, man.
I love you.
Love you too.
And I'm glad that we met. I like to meet musicians that are smart. it gives me hope for the future.
Oh, thanks,
man. Yeah, man.
It was great being here. Yeah,
yeah, great talking to you guys. Yeah. Now we can turn the air conditioner back on.
All right.
Okay. Thanks for coming. Yeah. Trey and John from Lost Coast. Great band, man. You can find them at lostcoast.com. Find out when they're playing. Get a link to that song, Summer Samaritan, which they have on SoundCloud. Great, great band. I want to thank my friend Chaney for bringing him by. I want to thank those guys for coming by. We actually all went to lunch right after we did that, and that was really fun. That doesn't normally happen. Headed over to Counter Cafe over there on East 6, one of my favorite places to go. Anyway, John and Trey are making great music. Get out there and check them out, lostcoast.com. While you're out there checking out Lost Coast, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the app Stitcher, which allows you to stream over 20,000 shows right to your smartphone or pad. It's a free app. 20,000 shows, streaming all the time. Sign me up, baby. How Did I Get Here is on there, along with Fresh Air, along with Nerdist, along with WTF, along with a lot of great shows that you enjoy, okay? Thank you so much for listening to the show. Let's hear the rest of this song, Summer Samaritan, which you can go listen to on SoundCloud. Always a great app to have on your phone when you need to hear tunes. I have it on my phone, and I enjoy it, all right? Here's the rest of Summer Samaritan from this band, Lost Coast. Look them up, lostcoast.com. Get out and see them, all right? Have a great day. Let's get down.